Hi, this is Anne Filippi, founder of The New Health Club. If you want to know about psychedelics as new mental health tools, you came to the right place. I talk to innovators, thought leaders and disruptors, creating the future of mental health and mental wellness. And we think that the future is already here. Hi, and welcome to a new episode of The New Health Club Show. Today, I talk to a real legend in the psychedelic field, and this legend is called Dr. Stanislav Grof, or Stan Grof, as some of his friends call him. You might have heard his most famous quote about LSD. Grof says LSD is a catalyst or amplifier of mental processes. If properly used, it could become something like the microscope or telescope of psychiatry. Stanislav Grof is a psychiatrist with over 60 years of experience in research of non-ordinary states of consciousness and one of the founders and chief theoreticians of transpersonal psychology. He was born in Prague in 1931, where he also received his scientific training, an MD degree from the Charles University's School of Medicine and a PhD degree from Czechoslovakian Academy of Sciences. He was also granted honorary PhD degrees from the University of Vermont in Burlington and the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology in Palo Alto, California, and the World Buddhist University in Bangkok. Dr. Grof's early research in the clinical use of psychedelic substances was conducted at the Psychiatric Research Institute in Prague, where he was principal investigator of a program that systematically explored the heuristic and therapeutic potential of LSD and other psychedelic substances. So Dr. Grof was one of the first doctors using LSD in psychiatry. In 1969, Dr. Grof became assistant professor of psychiatry at the Johns Hopkins University. In 1973, he was invited as scholar in residence to the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California, where he developed with his late wife Christina Grof holotropic breathwork, an innovative form of experiential psychotherapy and psychotherapy that is being used worldwide. Dr. Grof is the founder of the International Transpersonal Association, ITA, and for several decades served as its president. Currently, Dr. Grof is professor of psychology at the California Institute of Integral Studies, CIIS, in the Department of Philosophy, Cosmology, and Consciousness in San Francisco. In May 2020, Stan and Brigitte Grof, who got married in 2016, launched their new training in working with holotropic states of consciousness, the so-called Grof Legacy Training. So this is what our conversation will be about Stan's career, about his incredible contribution to the psychedelic studies and science. This conversation took place with Stan and Brigitte Grof in the first place because they collaborate and conduct seminars and training courses in holotropic breathwork and in transpersonal psychology worldwide. But also because Stan had suffered a stroke a few years ago and just feels more comfortable with Brigitte next to him. So to me, this conversation was a really big honor. And Stan and Brigitte give rare insight in the early days and the future of psychedelics. So please enjoy this very, very special conversation. Today, the New Health Club show is like a very special episode because we have Stan or Stanislav Grof on the show. And I mean, this is like having you're one of the most important people in psychedelics right from the beginning. And I think you belong to the first wave. And I'm just going to read for people who never heard of you, just a very precise introduction, because I think it's always good to have that people really get what your achievement already is. So you are known as, Stanislav Grof or Stan Grof, a psychiatrist who has been living in the States from 1960. You're one of the principal developers of transpersonal psychology and research into the use of non-ordinary states of consciousness for purposes of exploring healing and obtaining growth and insights into the human psyche. It is the very official explanation one would find of you. It's fine. But first of all, I mean, the very short version would be you were one of the first doctors, psychiatrists who ever experienced a psychedelic treatment in the context of psychiatry, which is, if we look at it today, like, I don't know, it's like inventing a Tesla, maybe. I don't know, to me. So the car, the Tesla car, like as if you would invent a new car. So you invented, or you were one of the researchers for a very new treatment for psychiatry. So, and thankfully, you come back now into this new psychedelic world, which we're going to talk about later, and hopefully have as much possibilities as possible to contribute to the current psychedelic renaissance. And of course, as we're not alone here today with you, we're joined by your amazing wife, Brigitte, who you collaborate with and who is also here to support you since you experienced a stroke a couple of years ago. So because you wanted me to just to say this in the conversation that people will get the right impression. And maybe you can introduce Brigitte for our listeners and our fans of the show.
Brigitte is my wife. We will be soon 5 years.
Married. Married for 5 years.
Married 5 years. Mm-hmm. But we have known each other over 30 years.
35 years.
35 years.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Since that time, she was always working with holotropic breathwork. Should I say one of the early people? She was doing it at Esalen at the time before we even doing training.
So okay.
I had stroke 2 years ago, and it hit on my speech center. Mm-hmm. Not on. I was not paralyzed. I don't think it. damage my...
No. Your brain is wonderful.
Brain is okay.
Your mind is great.
but I feel comfortable if she is here, if maybe we'll need to, you know, with some words that she has known is
sure.
Everything, so she can help. Yeah.
Perfect. I mean... We also really need your you guys' knowledge for the next years in this industry, since it's very unique. And but before we get into your two books, I would really like to know, now that you're in the middle of this, let's say, especially in 2020, of this, let's say, yeah, renaissance, or even like maybe third wave, as we know from Michael Pollan, of the return of psychedelics in a very different, even more sustainable way, because there are so many studies happening around us. So how is this for you as an experience when you suddenly see this interest coming back and even very concrete people approaching you, asking you to work with them? So how does it make you feel as somebody who's really very much involved in the first wave?
Well, I think, first of all, it's fantastic that it's happening, you know, after 40 years when basically nothing was happening. Mm-hmm. And quite a few of the people who were part of the times in the 60s, and so many of them are not alive anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm, exactly, yeah.
And what is happening here is the new generation, and they didn't have the chance to be supported by the previous people who were the pioneers. Mm-hmm. And so I'm, you know, very, very happy that they've done together this Psychonaut. You know, that people who are now starting, you know, would be available to have what we have created before.
mm-hmm. all your information that you found in the research yeah. of 60 years. Yeah, it's in mm-hmm. there.
Well, I'm first of all very excited that it's even happening. I didn't think that it was happening.
Yeah.
You know, when for the last time I talked with Albert Hofmann, you know, mm-hmm. We were talk, of course, about psychedelics and the futures, and he had this idea that there's a possibility that the two substances, LSD and psilocybin, that he discovered, maybe would in the future, you know, would be integrated with actually societies. Mm-hmm. Very much we had this idea about what was happening in ancient Greece.
Greece. Eloises. You know?
Eloises. Eleusinian in mastery and so on. Mm-hmm. Where for almost 2,000 years people were doing every 5 years. Then they had doing which was called Kiteon, which was the sacrament that was done in these mysteries. Mm-hmm. And Albert Hofmann and a couple other people, Gordon Wasson and Karl Ruck, they you're trying to find out what this Kiteon was, and they came to the conclusion that this was a substance which was made of ergot, very similar to LSD. So that basically for almost 2,000 years, mm-hmm. generations, you know, were doing this in Crete and in Italy and minor Asia, you know. And he believed that it was somehow because they had the available to psychedelics, that they had some amazing philosophy. They had sculptures. They had tragedies and so on. An amazing culture. And so he believed that this would be something like a future Eleusis, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And of course, at that time, you know, it looked like a fantasy that something like this would happen.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Happened, I mean, now it's amazing renaissance that's now happening. You know, this is possible that something like this would happen, and that we at least be moving in that direction.
It really came
as
a surprise.
At the beginning, people, you know, will have possible to have therapy, you know, mm-hmm. but hopefully sooner or later we would be able to do working LSD and psilocybin for creativity.
Mm-hmm. This is already happening also? Like,
yeah, friends, two of the people at least who believe that LSD had influence on the discoveries that he got for a Nobel Prize was for the discovery of DNA, you know, was Francis Crick. Mm-hmm. Francis Crick, and the other one was, Steven Jobs was, of course, one that believed that, you know, this.
Well, it's
all the other people who maybe were not named, but they were very important influence in development of the
digital world,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, like Elon Musk, for example, too. He talks about it in a couple of podcasts. But I mean, I would really like to come back to the moment when you, I mean, you were a psychiatrist in a very established hospital, and it was early stages, one could say, of psychiatry in general. So can you tell us a little bit how you got in touch with LSD and how you even heard about it, and then also how you were able to bring it to patients also?
The story is even more interesting, because actually Stan wasn't even planning to be a psychiatrist. He wanted to be in animated movies. Like his hero was Walt Disney, because he is a very good artist. He's drawing wonderfully. So you want to share that, Svitan?
Yeah, well, I was, I like to paint and draw. And I was very much into Walt Disney, as a kid, and I wanted to go and become animated
movie for the movies, drawing for the animated movies. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And just before that happened, a friend of mine came and was brought a book. You know, I was very, very excited about it. And I said, "What's happening? What are you doing?" He says, "This is an incredible book. You know, you are reading it, you'll never be the same. Mm-hmm. It's, psychiatrist, you know, Freud. So he left it. I left the book for him. And I started doing it in the evening. And
reading. You were reading it.
Reading it. And I couldn't, couldn't stop. And I went through, this book. And then within a few weeks, I decided to become a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. University, the fourth year, I already started going to a psychiatric clinic. Mm-hmm. And this was a situation when we got the microcephaler get LSD from Sanders.
Okay.
And, they started using it. And he himself was very interested, but, this is a long session, six mm-hmm. hours or so. So mm-hmm. he couldn't do it, of course. It was busy. And so there were a couple of other students in psychiatry, who were like a chauffeur,
Gopher
for... We were sitting for these sessions. Mm-hmm. So there were at that time there were psychiatrists, psychologists, there were painters who were coming, and so I was sitting there already, really 2 years before I got in medicine. And what's interesting was that. We were themselves not allowed to do it, unlike mm-hmm. what happened in Harvard, mm-hmm. where students were doing it. We had to wait. I had to wait and sitting with these people, and I had my weights.
It wettened your appetite.
My appetite.
The experience.
So soon as I was... as I was graduated, I just became my own LSD sessions. Mm-hmm.
But Stan, maybe good to mention that psychiatry then was quite a medieval, cruel situation.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, it was like electroshocks. And
this was the time when there was just barely beginning of tranquilizers and so on. Mm-hmm. Antidepressants and so on. So we were mostly insulin, electroshock, cortisol, and also lobotomy, at that time. So it was really very
cruel.
And so when LSD came, which was very elegant, as compared to what was available.
Yeah, yeah. Elegant is a nice word for that, yeah.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah.
And so, of course, I wanted to have my own experience. Mm-hmm. And my guy was a preceptor, he was a docent, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He was very interested in EEG. And at the time when we were doing it, he was also interested in what's called driving the brain waves, mm-hmm. which means exposing people into stroboscopic light, very, very powerful. And changing the frequencies and see if somehow what's happening in the suboccipital area when somehow the stroboscope will influence the movements of these waves. Mm-hmm. So they call it driving the brain waves. Mm-hmm. And so everybody who wanted to have session, we had to also do before, during, and after this powerful stroboscope. So I had that combination, you know, which was unbelievably powerful experience. Mm-hmm. It was already accepting the first couple hours. Very, very interesting. I said, went very far where I was in Freudy, everywhere.
You were in psychoanalysis trained at that time, yeah? So.
And then also the amazing, of course, images, the cardioscopy.
Stroboscope.
Well, beautiful, beautiful images that I believe they are fractals now. At the time, I thought that somehow the substance is influenced the retina, you know, the... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that you see these beautiful images that were happening, which was like somehow from cathedrals or from
mosques,
mosque and so on, beautiful
Arabian
images.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I think, which have fractals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was amazing already, but then came this stroboscope, and you know. As I saw this lit coming, the light seemed like I've never seen before, you know, like what they talk about, mystics talking about millions of suns, you know. Then exploded. I had lost connection with the clinic, with Prague, with Planet, you know. And
mm-hmm. Yourself.
And then I had the feeling that... wasn't to exist anymore, but I had the feeling that I became everything there was.
Nothing and everything.
And then coming down, you know, I had experiences like in the astronomic universe, or actually I was the universe then, and things were happening that at the time I didn't really understand.
Yeah.
This was long before the Big Bang, you know, so this came later, these black holes and white holes and wormholes and so on. Mm-hmm. So this was happening, was somewhere in that category, you know. And this was happening. This assistant was taking like from two sarks and then going all the way to six, and then they stayed in the A alpha
the frequency of
the frequencies, the light, yeah, going through the frequencies, mm-hmm. All the way to data, you know, mm-hmm. data from that, and then she turned it off, and you know, then of course my universe started shrinking again. You know, I found a planet. I found
the planet.
The planet, and then I have a big problem because my consciousness was kind of floating around my body, and I couldn't get it. I could coordinate it together,
mm-hmm.
and at that point I understood that what they taught me in university nonsense. You know that. Consciousness is created by the brain, mm-hmm. by the material.
Mm-hmm.
And then after some time, I managed to get together and was in a really wonderful, wonderful state afterwards. And I decided, you know, that this is why I'm become a psychiatrist, that this is the greatest thing that I can do is doing in these non-ordinary states of consciousness.
Okay. And I mean, when you, let's say, underwent a therapy with people that you were treating at that time, so because you said earlier that it's like, as we know, there were only very cruel treatments that are still existing, if we're honest, in psychiatry. But so did you talk to the patients or the people you treated about their trauma that they might have experienced? Was there like a therapy before where you really researched what they maybe went through or what happened to them? Because I can also imagine there were some people who didn't have from the surface, a very traumatic experience, but they still ended up in psychiatry.
Do you mean the people in the LSD therapy, or you mean in the electroshocks?
I mean, in the LSD therapy, like people that Stan actually, let's say, offered them, would you like to try LSD therapy? But so what's interesting to me is what kind of knowledge, you know what I mean? Like what you talked to them before, maybe.
Well, what happened initially, you see, was that we all thought that this was somehow the secret was in the substances, you know, was pharmacology, you know. Mm-hmm. So initially, I was started in pharmacology. And as we were changing these sessions, I thought that the amazing thing was that there was incredible intra-individual variability. That you know, people were coming in the same set and setting, they mm-hmm. were doing the same substances, the same dose. And each of them has something different. Then also when the individually we were doing the sessions again with the same substance, let's say 2 weeks ago, it would be completely different.
Ah, okay.
And so at mm-hmm. that point I realized this is not pharmacology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I realized so what we are doing. This is like, at that point I said, this is like a microscope or like a telescope, you know. So if we really can work with these substances, it can just completely changed psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I was not interested at all in pharmacology. And I am not, since that time, I'm not interested in, I know that this is about psyche.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So immediately I went from psychopharmacology and I went to clinics. Basically, almost like returning back to Freud, you know. Mm-hmm. We started working only, it was in a very, very new, powerful substance, you know, that my mind much deeper, much much faster than you ever can with psychoanalysis.
Mm-hmm.
So that you were asking about the question. So then we were knowing this is a substance that is absolutely new. This has never been created anywhere, you know.
Yeah.
And so. We wanted to use, at the first we used with people who did not really have respond to previous substances. We already had some these tranquilizers and so on, and some antidepressants and so on. And if it didn't work, then we basically started working with LSD and psilocybin there.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, to have the right, you know, we didn't know what would happen. Although we were doing it ourselves, we were taking chances. But you never know if we have a new substance, you know, what's going to happen, what kind of side effects
sure.
you're
sure.
going to be. So,
well, you know, I said to Stan, you know, when traveling these inner worlds, I mean, this can be very wild and challenging. You can have the feeling you are dying, you go crazy and so on. And now we have the map and we know from his books and so on, we are informed, you know. And so how could you take the courage to do this, you know? I mean, that not knowing what's going to happen. And then what was your answer?
That might be curiosity, I guess.
It's just
unbelievable, you know.
Curious.
The most incredible adventure that you can imagine. I mean, after each session, you know, we didn't know what was happening to us or to our patients. It's amazing, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting. I didn't know this about you that you wanted to, let's say, get into the Disney world because. I had that experience, but also other people who did psilocybin that and until today, I mean, which is a year ago, I remember when psilocybin at Synthesis, when it kicked in, I feel like I saw 5,000 Disney characters at once. And it was really recognizable Disney characters, mm-hmm. like Peter Pan, Tinkerbell, some uh-huh. variations of Mickey Mouse. And mm-hmm. other people saw that too. They were like, yeah, I saw the Little Ice Age, like from Pixar movie. So why do you think that is that we, I mean, it's like a super interesting connection. So Disney should move to a psychedelic movie department probably after this conversation. So
it happened to me lately too. I got into the Disney world.
Once in a while, yeah.
It was like a, you know, these when they have these it's almost like this pastel color, they have these castles and so on, you know,
it's
typical Disney style and also some characters. Yeah.
So that's so interesting that we see them in like an entertainment world, but it comes back in our subconsciousness as
why do you
a meaning.
Think that happens, that Disney comes in the psychedelics, sweetheart?
You know, that happens sometimes, but there are all kinds of other things, of course, from
sure.
the beginning.
Well, we know from the third matrix that there can be...
Sometimes it goes, you know, because people start feeling that it's very serious and so on. There's almost like a tendency to create something that you know, from the movie. And, of course,
it's true.
What happens, then you have true. Something very different from what you get in Disney, you know. For example, then it started going to birth experiences and so on, and it became experience when it seems like death and rebirth, you know, and very, very different than silly symphonies, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel sometimes it helps you, it's almost like it seems sometimes a translation for yourself if you experience the trip to go back to a child perspective also in a weird way. So if you see yourself as a comic, which as again, like a lot of people had that experience. But I mean, let's talk about, because this is all basically all your amazing knowledge is just very, I mean, there's more knowledge you have, but there are these two volumes that you will bring out now in the world, also in different languages, The Way of the Psychonaut. And again, to make it a really short description, is that these books are basically the base of psychedelic therapy, one could say. Like, what is happening while somebody is under, like a patient or like a... Yeah, sometimes patients, sometimes people who want to have an experience. What are they actually experiencing? And also, what is important for the therapist who is, or the psychiatrist who is providing the network and the safe set and setting? So What would you say are the, for you, the basic message of these two books, and why are they important right now?
Well, one thing was, you know, that I was already in my 80s and so on, where people usually look behind and see what they did and put it together. So what is there is really a compendium of something that I have done in for more than 60 years. Mm-hmm. So the other one, it's... is also the 75th anniversary of the discovery of LSD for Albert Hofmann. Mm-hmm. So it's a celebration of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And what happened was really important was that I was asked at that point to create some videos, you know.
A teleseminar. Mm-hmm. Shift Network.
From Steve Dynan. And he wanted to be, it was 7 weeks, you know, each Tuesday was something, and it was about transfer psychology.
Mm-hmm. Psychology of the future.
Psychology of the future.
The first course.
Psychology of the future. And they're very good people, you know. They came, and it was like over 600 people on it, and they wanted to do more, but not just another 7 or 8. They wanted now 24. On top of the eight,
you know.
That was, you know, very, very challenge. So I had to bring sort of everything that I could imagine that I remembered in relation to psychedelics. Mm-hmm. And then Brigitte was watching it, and she said, "Why, you know, this is amazing. This is really like an encyclopedia.
Why don't you publish this as encyclopedia?"
So basically what it is now, I believe it's everything that I know that people know when they do psychedelics, you know. Mm-hmm. Both themselves experiencing it or sitting for people.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's also like a manual for work with holotropic states of consciousness, which psychedelics, of course, is the main thing. But
we didn't say that, you know, I have a name which I created, which is called holotropic states of consciousness, which are the non-ordinary states of consciousness that have healing potential or therapeutic potential. They have heuristic, you know, HEUR. When you work with these states, you get basic discoveries.
Information.
You know,
you can get information.
Mm-hmm. Also, I believe that they are evolutionary, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that I have never done before. For example, talking about archetypes, that to see that this is now the most important thing to understand archetypes if you want to work with psychedelics.
You mean archetypes of people or the psyche of a patient, or what kind of archetypes do you mean?
Archetype is you know, something that came from Greece again. Plato, Aristotle, you know, those created the archetypes.
Yeah.
And then Jung brought it into psychology, of course. Mm-hmm. So initially, you know, when we had no idea that this is a key somehow for these experiences in this is principle, you know, of cosmic principles.
Principles.
Principles. Mm-hmm. So one is really important in a psychonaut is created a new kind of psychotherapy and psychology. You know, mm-hmm. You cannot work with LSD or with psilocybin using the kind of psychology or psychiatry that we have now.
Yeah. You know,
because many of the things that are really important for our healing, you know, they would be, those kinds of experiences would be seen by traditional psychiatrists to be psychotic experiences, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the experiences, you know, that that are important with LSD or psilocybin, mm-hmm. Would be seen if they happen,
yes,
in everyday life would be seen as psychotic. People would get tranquilized,
yeah,
for that. So we had to just change these concepts. So there mm-hmm. are a number of these kind of experiences that are now seen as part of the spiritual world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That people find in ritual and spiritual, it's like in rites of passage, for example, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. what was experiencing mm-hmm. in these mysteries and so on. Those are all normal experiences mm-hmm. for those kinds of contexts.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2 days, when it happens, you know, people think because we don't have the properly understand mm-hmm. The psychology or psychiatry then would be seen mm-hmm. as psychosis, you yes. know.
So that's what you're describing in the books, is the big map of the psyche, including perinatal levels and personal level, yeah? Mm-hmm. and the even the archetypal levels.
For example, one of them is shamanic experiences, mm-hmm. you know.
Okay.
That we see in a lot of the people who came from our countries, and they don't have any knowledge about shamanism, and they start having shamanic experiences. Mm-hmm. The other one is called Kundalini, which is the something that you find in India, spontaneous mm-hmm. experiences. That can happen in today to Western people, you know, again in LSD or psilocybin and so on, all today also spontaneously.
Or in the
by itself.
In the breath work as well, in the holotropic breath
work. Holotropic breath work, we see it all the time. We see shamanic experiences, we see these experiences of Kundalini
energy experiences.
Other people, you know, start having past life experiences. Mm-hmm. That again, psychiatrists would frequently see it as psychosis rather than a normal spiritual kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few of them. Even some people having the experiences from other universes and so on. Mm-hmm. UFO experiences and so on. So so those are not psychosis. Those are coming from what Jung was talking about, a different kind of consciousness,
collective unconscious.
It's coming from. So okay. we just need okay. to have a new kind of cartography for mm-hmm. psychology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And psychiatry, you know.
I need to read more. So Jung,
we have to have a way of how to work with these people, mm-hmm. and they mm-hmm. can actually have very positive experiences out of it.
Mm-hmm.
The good news was that for this long first of all, I'm so happy that these teleseminars are recorded before Stan's stroke, because now all his knowledge is conserved by him speaking and showing pictures and everything. So these are just treasures in the SHIFT network. Mm-hmm. Can be watched there, and we also use them for our training. Mm-hmm. So the other interesting thing was signing up for 24 seminars half a year. It was a tall order, and we were you know, thinking, oh, what else can you say, you know? And so Stan has to leave his comfort zone, and he had to dig in all his knowledge. And so this is why the Encyclopedia of the Psychonaut includes many things that he has not published before. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, like higher creativity, the archetypes and the history of psychonautics and so on. And so mm-hmm. that's why it's really a broad, it's very broad, and it's very, very good. And so, and the other thing is that, so the conceptual openness of the therapist is one thing, but it's also, these processes are so intense. So it's really important that the therapists have to be trained, not only intellectually, but they have to really experience these states by themselves. So mm-hmm. they feel comfortable with it. I mean, you know, you need to know these places that can happen and how to navigate through them to be with people safely and support them in a good way. And that's mm-hmm. One of the reasons we have created a new training this year, the Graf Legacy Training, which will train people all over the world in work with these holotropic states of consciousness, and also we'll have where it's needed a special psychedelic sitter training where it's possible and where it's needed. It's not everywhere allowed, and you know, it's different sure. from country to country, but I think this renaissance will need a lot of qualified people sitting yeah. for psychedelic sessions. This is really important. I mean, this is not a cookie or, you know, a joke. This is powerful, powerful tools that need really good expertise in working with them, because what we really don't want to experience is what happened in the 60s, that it's, you know, gets fucked up and gets forbidden mm-hmm. again. So that's very much our mission with our new training to mm-hmm. support that.
And would you say this is one of the most important, let's say, things that people who are entering the space now, whatever it is, that the therapist has to have had a psychedelic experience that is working with people? Because some people say it's not necessary, but I don't think this will work without having experienced psilocybin or like LSD. Or
absolutely. Yeah.
Not one.
Oh, A, many. Like many. 20.
Many. Well, 20. Yeah, and in your, say how it worked for you in your training.
Well, when we were doing it in Prague, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. First of all, people was actually psychiatrists or psychologists. They can have at least 5 high dose sessions with LSD or psilocybin. And then afterwards, they had to go work with 30 patients mm-hmm. okay. under supervision. So you have to experience, you know, with mm-hmm. 30 patients after having 5 sessions themselves. And then if everything was okay, then they just got their own substances.
Okay. Wow.
Now, what we had in... Baltimore, this was a little strange mm-hmm. Because we were able to have our self sessions. Actually, this was one of the experiences that we were doing, was we could bring psychiatrists, psychologists, or social workers and so on, and they could have up to 3 sessions just for training. And so we could do it ourselves. So we all had to have sessions, but we had people who were basically doing testing before and afterwards. And so they told us that none of them had ever had psychedelic experiences. Mm-hmm. Because they felt that once we had the experiences that we are not
neutral,
a virgin, no more
not
the virgin terrain,
anymore.
You know.
Okay.
So people who were testing before and afterwards, they were supposed to not to have ever muted their mind, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. And we felt that on the other hand, if you do as a therapist, you would have no idea if you have not the experiences yourself.
Right.
People usually say, you know, I've heard people say, psychiatrists, you know, they didn't want to do it. And they said, well, you know, we do all kinds of others. If I work with insulin, I don't have to take the insulin. You know, I'm a doctor, you know.
Okay.
So why would not also take all the other substances?
True. Yeah.
But you know, what also is really important is, you know, it's not everywhere available to...
No, of course.
Officially, legally work with this. But what is really amazing is if you learn to do the holotropic breathwork or Grof breathwork, as we also call it, it's so amazing what you're learning. I mean, first of all, very similar states just happen in the breathwork. And it's, you know, you get so comfortable with these states, seeing people, you know, on the mattress screaming, dancing, or having shaking or whatever, or, you know, mm-hmm. feel they're dying and reborn and so on. So it's a really fantastic training to do that, to learn that, to get comfortable with these states, experience them themselves, even non-pharmacologically, and learn how to do the body work and music and so on, and help the integration. So that's really, really great, you know. We really recommend. And it's so amazing how people can get so comfortable, you know. For us, it's just normal to see all this. But sometimes when people come fresh, they go, oh, my goodness, you know.
What's happening? Yeah.
I remember the first one of our wonderful teachers actually was in my first in my group for the first time, and he was really scared what he saw there, because that was all he learned in his training, that this is dangerous, it's psychotic, it's crazy, you know. So mm-hmm. that was a big relearning. Of course, not every psychosis is a spiritual emergency. I don't want to say that. I mean, there has to be very differentiated. But again, if you're not used to these things, you can get scared and think this is weird. But once you know that this is really healing and transforming and liberating for the people, or you experience it yourself, then you get just a total natural relationship with it. You know, you even like it. I mean, I had some people, they said, oh, how do you stand all the screaming? And I said, well, it's music in my ears, because when the suffering is inside, it's silent,
yeah,
and it's very harder. Once the expression starts, it means it's leaving the system. So it's mm-hmm. it's the healing and the liberation. So mm-hmm. we can really learn that, you know.
But can you talk a little bit about the spiritual emergency? What is the definition, or how would you describe it?
Well, this was the name, you know, that we mm-hmm. gave to these experiences people we saw as a crisis when they have a opening up to spirituality, and it's just a very strong kind of a experience, and they mm-hmm. they might have difficulties with that. This is why it's seen as it's a mental disease, you know, it's a psychosis. And so we found out that actually, if you can understand what it is, and if you work in it properly, then actually they benefit from it enormously. Much better than you could ever do, you know, with tranquilizers and so on. Mm-hmm. So we had this whole series, I think about 10 of them, there'll probably be more, which was the Kundalini, which was the shamanic experiences. Mm-hmm. They were particularly very powerful ones, which was John Perry, the psychiatrist, Jungian, who worked with these people, who we mostly get the psychosis for that, because they had the experience of suddenly they are in the middle of the universe, everything's happening, you know, there are dark forces and light forces fighting with each other and so on. It's a very, very powerful type of experiences. And, you know, he worked with these people. We had two facilities where people were going in one was called Diabesis in San Francisco. The other one was Cresselit, which was then San Diego. And they would go there, and he wouldn't them any tranquilizers.
They would stay there.
They just were allowed to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sit down, and he used the principles of Jungian psychology and sort of integrate these experiences mm-hmm. with them. And it was really very, very interesting, because when he wanted to have people like nurses and so on, people who were taking care of them, he wanted people who actually had a peace-like experiences themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they integrated it.
Mm-hmm.
So they saw that as a positive, you know, mm-hmm. that they know they can...
Transformation.
This is very similar to what we say, to work with LSD, you have to have the experience yourself. So he said when you want to work with these people mm-hmm. who had a spiritual emergency, then you ideally either had it yourself or you do with psychedelics, which is very similar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is exactly the opposite, because if you work in regular psychiatry, psychology, and people would have these kinds of experiences, this would be seen as a
psychosis.
You know, it's a negative. It's a negative thing. This,
Of course.
Those people try to never mention that something like this would have happened, because if this would, they would think they are not
not okay.
Really,
they're
not.
So it's
everything
like,
would be shut down, kind of like
I
suppressed
think it's
again.
Could be understood like a spiritual emergency. If you normally you say, all right, I want to experience something, I sign up for a workshop, I do a private session, or I do a psychedelic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this, but this would come spontaneously. You have not signed up for it, and it doesn't stop after the weekend or after a couple mm-hmm. of hours. It's just mm-hmm. a process that is spontaneous and that's going on. And, the problem with this is often that there are not enough places where a person could go and be taken care of, so it could just go on and be supported until it's completed itself. That mm-hmm. would be the ideal. So this is there's not many places like that are needed, you know. And mm-hmm. and again, but not every, you know, it's not everything is a spiritual emergency. There's also things that are, you know, other problems. So,
you know, I started giving you the series of these spiritual emergency, and we sort of went to John Perry, which was probably a very interesting one. I would just say for a couple more past life experiences
mm-hmm.
people have, and they get quite problems with it, you know. And again, seen as this is psychotic, not something that's accepted in psychiatry.
Yeah,
another one, you know, another one that happened, of course, a very difficult one is possession
uh-huh.
kind of experiences. That's another one of those. Also, people who have
the channeling?
Channeling, yeah. Channeling.
Oh, wow, yeah, okay. Sure.
Channeling, very, very,
be very psychic in the middle of this.
So there's some amazing experiences of that. A lot of these spiritual books, you know, or systems, they were actually channeled like this. For example, from the Vedas, you know, people certainly from Islam, you know, if Mormon and all those things are channel experiences. And we had probably the most interesting one, which was the
Course in Course in Miracles. You know that?
Okay. Yeah. No, yeah. I don't.
You don't know? No.
No, I don't.
It has like in many, many books translated all over the world. And a lot of people, psychiatrists, psychologists now actually are using that. Helen Schachman, she was a psychologist in New York, you know.
Oh, she's in a movie, right? Yeah, she's in your movie.
Yeah,
also.
And she started having these voices. And of course, if you're a psychologist, psychiatrist, and you start hearing voices, you know, that's a bad news.
Yeah.
It depends on the voice.
Jesus and so on. And then finally she decided to do it and started to writing it. And they actually, we were in Napa doing a training ourselves. And they came just to visit, not for us, but for the people who were in the center. And they brought the book, just they finished it and so on. And then we had lunch, and she said, you know, could we borrow your group? They're sort of a little more open-ended, you know. I would like to show them what they think about it. And so people heard some of the things, what was happening, and they all accepted. And they said, well, by all means, go and translate it. It's a fantastic thing.
Wow.
So we had some good influence, you know, on when it was actually published.
Okay.
And she the reason why she was very changed about it was that when she had these voices, you know, she started taking some parts of Bible. I was saying that there were some mistakes made, because there were all kinds of translations, you know, from Aramaic and Greek and so on. So there were mistakes made in these translations. And she was starting to check it, and it was accurate. So whatever was coming from it.
Crazy.
So that really, there's something to it, you know. This was correct what was saying.
I mean, that's kind of a whole new world that will be opening up, right? If we start to get into these also very spiritual parts in terms of psychedelics again, not only about the, yeah, let's cure depression and then that's it, kind of like here's the medication and bye, kind of. But I wanted to talk to you also about my new favorite topic, DMT.
DMT,
which I don't know anything about yet. And but I think when we talked the last time, so I told you that like the Imperial College has just started their first study on DMT. So and you already mentioned the great book, The Toad and the Jaguar by Ralph Metzner, right?
Yes.
And maybe you can talk a little bit about this substance that seems to come very much in the forefront and is like the next thing, it seems, after psilocybin that is researched very.
I would also want to mention a book on DMT by Markus Berger from Nachrichten Verlag in German. Very wonderful.
Exactly.
Book. It's great.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you about Ralph.
Yeah.
You know, what Ralph was doing at the time, it was 40 years or whatever, when psychedelics could not be done, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was traveled all over the world. He was going to Europe, he was coming in America and so on. And he was drawing people who, quite a few of them were sort of underground people, and others found some kind of loopholes, you know, for it, that they were able to do it. Mm-hmm. And so they were there, and they just get the information from them and collected it. It's amazing. And so he wrote this book on the toad and jaguar, because that's really the most interesting of the substance. We did some work way back, you know, like in 1960, or at that time we were doing it in Prague. Mm-hmm. And wow. These tryptamines, they came from Hungary. Steve Zara was there, and Bestermann was another Hungarian psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And so they were the one who developed these substances. And so we were working with it. And we actually didn't like the DMT, because this was very short. We didn't feel mm-hmm. that it was really good enough for therapy, you know. It's mm-hmm. very short. But the one that was there, we didn't at the time work with the 5-methoxy.
5-methoxy, DMT, 5-MeO.
But there was one which was propanol, NAPI, propanol, you know, this is the next one. We were working with it in Baltimore.
Dipropyltryptamine.
Dipropyltryptamine, the higher one, mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. And this is amazing, because that's about 4 hours, and immediately ended with a very short time, and people just can go and function. Mm-hmm. It's not like with psychedelics, you can go, for example, with LSD, you can go quite a while before you can work in everyday life.
Yeah.
So that was true. Very, very easy to work with. Now, when Ralph did it, he had two of them, which he called the twin, mm-hmm.
Mayan twin,
mm-hmm. which was added to it was the 5-methoxy, you know,
mm-hmm. 5-MeO.
Those were the two. The combined those two, mm-hmm. and he really by far preferred the 5. Methoxy, yeah, mm-hmm. because this little longer is very, very powerful, very deep one. You can do really good experiences, for example, the spiritual experiences you can have, and even do some therapeutic work within an hour, which is like a time that would take for an hour of psychoanalysis, you know.
It's a big difference.
Where you wouldn't even start doing anything.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
So I believe that this is something that would be the future mm-hmm. of psychiatry.
Mm-hmm. Well, the hour would be the experience, and you need some preparation and some integration. So I think it's about mm-hmm. 2 hours is a time span that should be faced. And also, mm-hmm. of course, I mean, the thing is that like Stan says, it really is over. I mean, you can get up and you don't have any hangover or so, but it depending, of course, on the experience, you should have the rest of the day off and not have to go back to your office. Yeah. And so, you know, ideally have a space where people can rest and can paint mm-hmm. or draw or write or just hang, you know. So, but that mm-hmm. but you could do a couple of these sessions a day as a therapist, maybe three or four.
I had initiated from this when I was in SLN at the time, and a friend came who found this substance, and they were asking, the people were now studying what it is. And they asked me if I would like to try that. And I said, of course, I would like to try that.
What you said.
Of course.
And I said, you know, this, I had no idea. They said, how much should I take? And he said, well, you take like for cocaine. You know, I don't do cocaine. So they show me how much, like this. And you put it on a glass and you change it in two pieces. And then you take like a dollar, you know, mm-hmm. pain book, and you make like a tune, and you
just snort it.
Blow into each of your nostril. You put mm-hmm. down, and then says, and then take some, you know, like in parsley or something, and put a little of it, and to the end you get from a pipe. You take a sock. Mm-hmm. And so I did it. I take the two and like maybe one or two of these from the smoke, mm-hmm. and I was gone. I have it's never like this, you know. I always, when I would do psychedelic session, mm-hmm. I wanted to lie down and be comfortable and so on. This was no question. What happened? I was just holding with the pipe, and people told me that I was just like a sculpture there, you know, and
nobody home. It was gone.
Like with a few minutes, I was like, you know, what is happening? What is this planet, you know, Stanislav Grof, Australia, or
America,
California, whatever? And I was just gone, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's this incredible experience that was.
Mm-hmm.
You can also take less.
You can read a bit. I put it in the book. I put it in the book when the impossible happens.
Mm-hmm.
When the impossible happens, it's a great book too. A lot of good stories in that one. I highly recommend it.
It's nice.
Have you read it?
No.
Oh, mm-hmm. you have to read it. Wenn Unglaubliches passiert in Deutsch, when the impossible happens. It's super great. It's so much
amazing,
fun.
Amazing. Again, it's very difficult to describe what it is, you know, but it was by far the most powerful experience I have ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I couldn't say if it was demonic or if it was divine.
Both, maybe.
Beyond anything.
Everything.
And then coming down, I had the experience that I was dying.
To come back to life, he was dying.
Usually people have the feeling they might be dying if they're going into death.
If they go
I was just way beyond death. Mm-hmm. And all the way when I was coming, body, I started
dying back.
Experience. I was dying in my body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then for some time, I was just sitting. I was now in a blissful experience, in a wonderful experience. And I started having a lot of experiences of past lives, mm-hmm. dying in different countries and, you know, different wars and so on. Mm-hmm. But it was not difficult. I was blissful, and this was like getting like out of my body, you know, this dying in the past, in the previous lifetimes, and so on. And then I came back, and then I was completely normal, but I was like for about a week in a place where I would love to live. I was in SLN, and we were terrace, mm-hmm. you know, on mm-hmm. the ocean, and I was working on a book editing, mm-hmm. and was perfectly able to do it. And then it was like sun was coming, and I said, "Oh, lie down, take a little, mm-hmm. you know, a respect and a respite,"
Take a little break.
And again, within like minutes, I was just sort of with everything, you know,
one with everything.
And then opening the eyes and continuing working with editing. And then, of course, and then I had to go travel and do workshops and so on. And then, you know, we need monies and so on. And then sooner or later, of course, came back. I didn't stay with that. But since that time, it became much easier to do it in meditation, something like this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just happen in everyday life, but quite amazing, amazing meditation that was afterwards. But I then wanted to be interested in how much I got, you know. And so I sort of looked about what it was on it, and it was like 25, which was a big, big dose, which I would never
don't
take.
Don't do it. Don't repeat this out there.
You know, absolutely like not.
Not to be recommended.
5 or
okay.
10 or something, you know, this was...
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
But it was by far the most powerful experience that I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the past lives that you visited? Do you remember who you were in these past lives, or one or two people?
You mean in other one?
Well, in general, did you have any?
In general,
yeah. If you look at this, when impossible happens,
it's also in the book.
I have several of them. One very powerful, which was in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Another powerful was in Egypt. Probably those are there in.
Well, we've seen some of ours together. You've seen our.
Well.
You seem to get it.
We have had some together, of course. Yeah, but.
Okay.
He was very mean in the past. Like, no, it's
oh,
a joke.
Oh, okay.
No, it's a joke.
No, I cannot imagine that.
But
coming back to the, because we also, I think we have to wrap it up very soon. So coming back to the now again, I mean, as we saw, 2020 was already such a big step in the new psychedelic, world, or like, in this third wave that we're experiencing now, if you want to call it like that. So what would be your biggest advice for people trying to bring this now into the world in a way that it's beneficial for pretty much everybody and not maybe for a specific Silicon Valley people who, of course, can create always a situation where they can access these things?
Yeah, I see one from two different directions. One, when we were working in Maryland, you know, in mm-hmm. Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
They called us and they said, you know, you guys are working, we were the last ones working with psychedelics, everything else. We're not allowed to do it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they ask, you know, a lot of the young people are taking it. Tell us what you should do with them. You know, they're experts. And we said, yeah, you know, if you want to take care of it, you know, you create centers all over America. And people who want to do it in the street somewhere, you go and do it decently done. You also would know exactly what substance they're taking, which they don't know in the streets and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And we would be able, we would be protected, and we would get all the information out of it, so we can really know much more about psychedelics.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening now is that everybody from a teenager, you know, knows more about psyche and about psychedelics than mm-hmm. psychiatrists.
Interesting.
And
it's true.
Bob Kennedy said the same thing. He said, you know, when they were trying to block it, he was talking about it, and he said, okay, this is a reason when millions of people are taking it that psychiatrists should be working with it. Mm-hmm. What a bizarre that the problem, you know, that the last thing that would know would be psychologists, psychiatrists. Mm-hmm. So this is, I would still said now, you know, do it, you know, mm-hmm. for people do it because we know that it's very safe, you know, if it's done properly. Mm-hmm. And the other question, you know, how people, what they would want to do it. Brigitte said that we have the training now, mm-hmm. which, mm-hmm. of course, we wait for the viruses to give us the permission.
Yeah.
Because we are working on the mattresses, you know. Mm-hmm. So if they do it, there's a possibility now they would go to the training, mm-hmm. and they would be trained to what we call the states of holotropic states of consciousness, mm-hmm. which is the same that you would use for doing holotropic breathwork, and the same kind of principle you would be using when you start doing psychedelics, and that also people are then learning how to work with spiritual emergency. Mm-hmm.
With process.
So those are the three things.
I
told you about the holotropic states of consciousness, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. it's such a certain category that have transformative.
You want to say what power. Holotropic means? Holotropic.
Holotropic, yeah. This is my word, and it's from Greece. It's. Holos means whole, mm-hmm. and trepein means to moving in the direction. So if you, for example, say helio about sun.
The
about
sun. Sun. Oh, helio.
Helio. Heliotropic. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you're going towards, moving towards the sun. Mm-hmm. So if you have this property that flowers have that they come, you know, and always follow after sun. So mm-hmm. holotropein means moving towards wholeness. Mm-hmm. So basically, the idea is that you can be all the way in these kinds of states. You can go to a situation where you become one, the oneness that I talked about. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the different states, you know, and some people come in them sort of faster, you know, in that feeling of wholeness and so on. Others go steps and so on. Mm-hmm. But that's the idea. This means wholeness.
Wholeness. You know,
moving toward wholeness. Very much like the heliotropic.
Can I add something for the psychedelic?
Sure.
Again, I think what I already said is very important, that the therapists or the people who are sitters are very well trained. Mm-hmm. That they know these experiences from their own process, and they know how to work and support people in these states, because this can be very challenging and it mm-hmm. can be very traumatic when you're in the middle of a challenging situation, when your therapist gets afraid and cannot support you. So that can be very traumatizing and very damaging. And the other thing that is very important is that the ethical aspect, you know, that it's a safe situation, ideally a man and a woman being mm-hmm. the therapist, so that there's always been, you know, in the past histories of sexual molestation and, you know, mm-hmm. and so this is very important that people really are totally safe who undertake mm-hmm. that journey in these states. That's mm-hmm. that's very important.
I think that's one of the most important things to pay attention to now that we move into a new era of psychedelic therapy, which is probably going to be there in the next 2 or 3, maybe 1 or 2 years, So that, because I also feel like from my own experience that the safety is like 80% of the experience, like that of the experience, but to make it possible to really engage yourself in this.
Oh, yeah.
And not like, oh, what's happening here and there? And like, who's this person? I never met them. Mm-hmm. So, but I think we talked like about a lot. And of course, like we could go on for the next 2 weeks.
I just may check and say, ideal would be to start with the holotropic breathwork, because they can have the experience.
Exactly.
And then the next, of course, is to have a proper set and setting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do it somewhere in the
streets
in the middle,
No.
Also to be sure that it's a pure substance, mm-hmm. And idea also would be at least to read about something to that they would not have the kind of situation that we had where we had
no idea
where we are going. Mm. It will help, it still doesn't sort of completely.
No.
Still, you will be surprised.
It's still different from what you read, but it's good to have a little bit in the background to say, oh, this is what Stan mentioned, I think, when he said, you really feel like you're dying. Oh my God. Uh-huh, okay. So.
But I mean, I think these two volumes of the Way of the Psychonaut, I think they, if you really would read this before doing any of these experiences, you have a bigger picture what actually you might experience. Because if you tell somebody, well, you might die, it's like, oh, I'm not going to do this, right? But what it actually means that you meet another person that you really are in this experience.
Yes. Well,
this
means dying. Okay, it's a rebirth.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all about developing and coming to a spiritual, deep spiritual understanding of who you are and what the world is like. So
exactly.
So it's, but that's why it's so important to understand that there are certain stages of a journey and where the journey is going, to really understand that. And this is really described so well in these books, and it's actually one book in two volumes. It's not two books. It would just have
Big. Okay,
so they belong together. It's not one.
No, you need to read it too.
It's one book. Yeah, it's very important to understand. And it's also available as an audiobook now in English.
Exactly.
And we are working on getting the audiobook also in the German language. So it's really nice to have that as an audiobook. We're just actually listening ourselves right now to the audiobook. It's really a good, wonderful thing to do. So.
It's a good preparation also.
Also, I should say, if people would like to use the Psychonaut for that, that says the holotropic states of consciousness and so on. And, but it would also be important when people really do it and people would be running sessions and so on, to also look at something that would be about the specific substance. Mm-hmm. For example, I have a book which is like this, which is LSD psychotherapy, about LSD. Mm-hmm. And if you would be doing psilocybin or you would be doing EMT or whatever, they should actually look at something about the substance itself. Mm-hmm. This one is general about psychedelics and so on. Mm-hmm.
But the different substances, they also have
additional
special energy.
Yeah, of course.
Like what? For example, what Mark did. Yeah.
Marcus on Mark the DMT book. Yes.
Mm-hmm. He was with. Also, they do the book now with the plants.
They did a book on the hemp as well. So that's also very interesting. No, Nachtschatten Verlag is an interesting.
Yeah, we already. We're going to put
you
in
do,
the,
if you do,
the link.
If you do, there is something, for example, about the toad. But if people really want to do it, they have to look at the toad and jaguar at least, So something specifically about the substances.
Yeah, they're very different. I mean, I'm on my ketamine experience right now, so not now, but like in my therapy. But it's a very different. It's so different than.
It's very different.
I mean, it's like so. There's all these psychedelics are not just. I mean, they're really. Yeah. It's like totally different characters. I mean, and but I mean, especially one should say, especially if they're used in therapy. Because if you just use them, it might be some crazy experience. But if you put them in a therapeutical context, which you did as the first person, then it's like every character can lead you to another experience or like another part of your personality. Right. Also maybe.
Well, that's what we always emphasize, this set and setting this work with these psychedelic substances to make it positive and healing. You really have to go inward. You're not going to a party. You're lying down. No. Close your eyes. You have somebody with you to take care of you. You may play some music, and you want to have a place where you can be loud. So if you need to express anything, sounds and so on, that this is a safe environment, and you know, and you know, you have time afterwards to integrate and so on, and to prepare.
And don't drive afterwards.
I would like to say just something very short.
Yes, very, sure. Yeah, no, definitely.
I'm happy about the archetypes. So I think the way the best to say that I will not go to the, you know, to the details. But for example, one of the things you can imagine, a great mother archetype, okay? Mm-hmm. There is an archetype which is abstract. But out of it can come different great mothers of, for example, Maria or you know, Kibela or whatever, many different. And so the archetype can really express the whole thing without specific. And then they can become out of it concretely these different mothers. Okay. Now the back questions were here. They for centuries, you know, they fought about this in philosophies about Plato and these archetypes and so on. And there were two groups. One of them saying these were nominalists. Nomen means name. And so basically, if you have the mother, you know, archetype of mother, they would think this nominalist means there are just names. This is nothing like concrete behind it. If the idea would be, if you are nominalist, you say that what it is, the great mother archetype, is an extraction of all the mothers that you know, that you have seen. It's an abstraction.
Abstraction.
The others are realist, which is not a great name, realist. But it means, no, there is actually a realm in which there is the great mother archetype actually exists there.
It's like an energy that is there.
Which is exactly what we have, that when we have past life experiences, you can become a you know, great mother archetype. And you can specifically from some other cultures, you can have Kali, or you can be Ragna from Bali, and so on. So wow, we're fighting in about this, you know, for centuries, and then science, of course, it goes in the direction of the nominalist. There's not something like the great mother archetype, you know. It's just abstractions and so on. But what is happening more and more now with Jung came, and then it's now happening with psychedelics. No, they're actually, there are mothers that we can experience. There is a realm in which these exist. Not materially, but they exist tangible enough, you know. So anyway, I just wanted to say something about that.
Well, no, I mean, like I said, it's like almost impossible to stop. We have to know, but it's just there's so many things that are are rediscovered now that people obviously seem to need for their mental health, so that have not been around for 40 years. So it's kind of a very like endless topic in the end, I think. But thank you so much for doing this. It was a great, I mean, it's an honor to have you on this thing. And I mean, as the two of you, because I think it's great that you kind of collaborate and bring this also now into the now, like into the next years. So, and of course we will mention the books again and like put them in the show notes and the whole book thing. I mean, we talk about this.
Oh, you want to say something else about me?
Sure.
What do you want to what do you want to say about me? Say it.
Well, said Brigitte is my wife. Kind of almost 5 years, but we have known each other for. Forever,
many lifetimes.
Some of us from the mud.
Since mud.
But we connected in Switzerland, and then you came to Esalen. Mm-hmm. You're there for a year, and actually working with us with the holotropic breathwork. For them, when there was no specific training. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, since that time, you have really working in holotropic breathwork mm-hmm. sessions all the time. You know? Mm-hmm. And now, since the time that we got married, we traveled together all over the world. We were in China together doing holotropic breathwork. Wow. We were in Argentina, we were in
Chile, Peru. At Esalen.
Yeah, from Czech Republic, of course, Sweden,
France.
So the whole Paris, world.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ecuador, many places. So. She's a very, very special person. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And
she
if you read that, if you read about the film, you know, there's mm-hmm. quite a few. You can see her already way back in.
I saw her.
Yeah.
Young, still young.
You look the same.
So,
you look exactly
so anyway,
the same.
And you know, so now when I have. Now the problem with speech and so on, and it's wonderful to have her around because she knows everything about me. And so mm-hmm. if there's a word that's missing, or she would sort of help with it very much.
That's great. I mean, I'm happy we could do this because I think it's really like a, I mean, besides that, it's an honor to do this. I'm very happy that we have you as one of the most important people when this whole thing started. I mean, like you said earlier, there's nobody there anymore who really witnessed all these important developments. So that's it's a great pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having us.
Of course.
I mean, thank you for doing this. That's great.
Of course. I'm happy we could figure it out. So have a great afternoon. And it's here. It's dark already in Berlin, as always at 4:00. And talk to you soon. And have a great still of the rest of the week.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.